Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Abundology Podcast. My name is Renee Spears, and my guest today is Zofia Renea Morales. And she is an award-winning global strategist, former biophysicist, host of the talk radio program Sovereign Self, and creator of the Conscious Enlightenment Process and an empath. So today we are talking about being an empath and how to navigate life as an empath. So, Zofia, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to join you and talk about all this.
Me too. Me too. And one of the reasons why is I am not an empath. But I have clearly lots of clients that are, and I want to be able to understand being an empath on a deeper level.
Absolutely. Well, and so many empaths out there feel like they're broken in some way because the world is populated primarily by people more like yourself who are a little bit more containerized, who have no question about what's yours and what's not yours.
Yes. So let's start with just the basic stuff. For those listeners that may not even know what an empath is, can you give us kind of just a little understanding or how you would describe an empath?
I describe an empath as kind of this energetic sponge in a way. Okay, now that's a real generic umbrella, but I'll give you a couple of examples of an empath kind of experience. So for the people out there who are like, I don't understand what energetic sponge is. Okay. An empath experience, for example, walking into a large conference, which is something they would avoid, first of all, but if they were forced to go, okay, walking into that great big room of people all talking and mingling and energized and getting ready for, you know, whatever this event is like walking into this wall of sound and energy. Okay, you would recognize it like walking into a rock concert at full volume. That would be how you would experience it. It doesn't have to be that loud. Okay, let's say this is like an academic thing. Okay, and it's not a bunch of funky rock music and everything. The empath would still run into that wave of energy. It would like smack them in the face. Okay. Depending on the kind of empath you are, there are some empaths who can do that and not have that problem because they experience other things. Okay. So some of us are very sensitive to like the emotional energy that's coming off of a crowd, like you would see in that situation. Other empaths will have this situation. For example, let's say you're in a meeting, like a conference room or whatever, you know, and your colleague runs in late and discombobulated and they sit down next to you and pretty soon you've got a headache happening and you feel this pain in your back that you didn't have before this colleague walked in and sat down next to you. This is a physical empath. Okay. And they're feeling everything that's rolling off of that person that they may not even be consciously aware of. Okay. They may not be aware that they have a headache yet. They may not be aware that their lower back is strained and about to go out, but the empath sitting next to them will know these things.
Fascinating. So there's different, I love this already. There's different types of empaths.
There are different varieties.
Varieties. Okay.
And so that's someone who's sensitive to like the physical, emotional aspect of things. There are empaths who are intensely aware of the environment and what's coming off of the earth. I have a friend who's in this category and she can't live close to cell towers. And she rented an apartment once, not realizing that the entire electrical paddle, all the meters were on the other side of her bedroom wall.
Oh.
And she was so sick the entire time she lived there because she's so tuned into that electromagnetic stuff that it's like trying to sleep in the middle of a rock concert. You know, it's just not happening. You don't rest well and you don't recover right. And so it's important for her to control that physical environment around her because she's so super sensitive to that sort of thing. There are also empaths who are, what do I want to say, who are tuned into the historic energy of a place, for example. Okay, and we'll take an extreme place location just for the example here today. walking into a place where horrific things have happened, like in Auschwitz, for example, will just completely overwhelm them because they can feel all the history of the people who were there before and the events that went on and the tragedy and the sorrow and the heartbreak and in some places the victory and the overcoming as well, but primarily it's going to be the lower vibe stuff that hangs out and repeats and repeats. And so they're super sensitive to that kind of thing. And so you might run into that with you move into an apartment and you keep experiencing, you know, this lonely person who you know, died by themselves in this apartment. And you're like, why do I keep getting this recurring feeling of like, oh, it's sad and I'm leaving and blah, blah, blah. Well, because this person died in the apartment. Okay. And it might not have been the previous tenant. It could have been, you know, the original person who lived in that apartment.
Wow. I had no idea. So I'm assuming then that everybody is different where
we all have kind of different takes.
Okay.
The way I look at spiritual gifts, which is one of the things that empathy is, as much as it feels like a curse until you understand how to work with it. It's a lot like your aptitude for subjects in school, right? Some of us go into the classroom and it's like, ooh, words, amazing, letters, and this is my jam. And others of it's like, forget that, but I love this history thing. And for other people, it's like, math is the bomb, right? Nothing wrong with any of those individuals. They just have a different set of pre-inclinations. It doesn't stop them from learning to read. It doesn't stop them from learning to do math or a basic grasp of history if you're not gifted in that area. But there are areas in which you're like naturally turned on, predisposed to operate.
Well, and I assume like any spiritual gifts that you're born with this, is this a nature versus nurture thing or?
There's some of both. Like
okay.
Most things in this world, there are
yeah.
usually a lot of contributing factors. There is a quote-unquote nature aspect. It's not so much linked to your DNA as it is to the life lessons that you chose to take on in this world. Okay. And so if you decided, I want to learn what it is to be an individual as opposed to part of a collective, okay, empaths tend to have a life lesson that's something, you know, in that neighborhood, perhaps, right? Because being an empath, you can experience being collective, like that entire group energy thing that's so incredibly overwhelming, or being an individual, which you can learn to pull away from that energy even without leaving the room. But most empaths end up leaving the room because it's so intense and they haven't been taught how to become that individual as part of their life lesson in this world. So it's not necessarily going to come naturally, which is why so many empaths develop these dysfunctional kind of coping skills.
Oh, like what?
Oh, people pleasing is like way up at the top of it. Now, there are a lot of different things that can contribute to people pleasing, but especially for empaths, okay, we already know it's hard to say no to someone else, right? You've
yep.
had that experience.
Yep.
It's like, oh, please, could you just take my kids? I'm in such a desperate place. I got to get to my job and blah, 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 blah. Okay. And you feel for the other person. You want to say, yes, absolutely, I'll take your kids for a few hours while you do this, despite the fact that you had a whole pile of things on your plate. And it messes up your entire day. Okay. So it's already hard to say no. But with an empath, not only do they have to say no, which is hard in the first place, but they feel everything that's happening with that other person, what's driving them to ask the question, as well as their reaction to the no.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And so, for example, if you were to tell someone no, say they called you on the phone, no, I'm sorry, really sorry, I'm slammed today, I absolutely can't. You know, did you call Susie, right? give them an option, right? And they're like, ah, end of the world. You can very politely disconnect from them and say, I really have to get back to what I'm doing. I know you can do it. You'll find a solution. Click. Okay. When you hang up the phone, you're disconnected.
When
the
Right.
empath hangs up the phone, they still have that backlash that's coming at them energetically. Okay, because the other person's reacting to that. No, they might be pissed off because, they took your kids last week and why aren't you returning? There's all this stuff. Okay, and the empath can't disconnect from that by just putting down the phone. And so it makes you much more of a people pleaser even than society would want you to be because of that emotional backlash that comes at you.
Okay. So just before we go on to the other ways that it can show up, how long does that last then? How long do you feel that emotional backlash?
Lot of variations around that. Some of it depends on how long the other person's sending it. That's the primary
Okay.
one. Okay. But even when they stop sending it, it also depends on how good you are at processing the stuff that's in your energy field, how much of it you recognize as your own, and how much of it your ego has glommed onto and is using to beat you up with. Okay. Because a lot of times when we say no to someone, having been raised in a culture where women are to serve and to help the other person and self-sacrificing and please be last on your list because it serves the rest of us so nicely, the ego will tend to grab that stuff and beat you up with it even after it stopped being sent your way.
Fascinating. This is so fascinating. It really helps me understand some of the thinking and what is going on with this. So, people pleasing one way, what are some other ways?
Some other ways, isolation is another
Okay.
big one, right? Because the only way to just be in your stuff, if you don't know how to deal with this gift, is to be far away from other people. Okay, so a lot of empaths don't want to leave their house. They don't like to live in the city. They'd rather be out in the country with just the birds and the plants and the animals and it's much simpler. Animals don't put that shit on you.
Exactly.
Okay. Although some empaths are specifically attuned to animals, and so they will, what do I want to say, hyper adopt frequently because they want to fix everybody and make them better and help the animal. A lot of times we're in this mode of seeing animals as very helpless creatures, and we're kind of trained into that. But if you really tune into the animal and what's going on with them, they're not helpless at all. They may have a moment where they need assistance.
So isolation, people pleasing.
People pleasing. Sometimes, as you're learning with your gifts, you can, what do I want to say, harden yourself is one of the things that happens. And so instead of having natural ebb and flow with the world, they put on like this armor around themselves and make them look like the biggest, baddest, whatever it is. But you lose that connection to other people, and it's hard to get it back when you're wearing armor. It sends entirely the wrong message. So you get these, for lack of a better word, prickly people. That's one of the ways it can show up. Another way it can show up is in manipulation. Okay, it's kind of the flip side of people pleasing. I'm going to find a way to control your emotions for you. I'm going to make you happy. I'm going to make you sad. I'm going to make you go away. Okay, that's another way in which it will show up.
So I love how you said this is a, or one of the spiritual gifts that we come into this lifetime with. What are some of the healthy ways?
How is this a gifted thing?
How is this a gifted
Now that we've
thing?
talked about all of the pain and the ways that it's like crashed down on your life, it's an incredible gift a lot of times when you are here, especially on a healer's journey. Healers need to be able to understand what's going on with their clients, for lack of a better term, the person who comes to them for assistance in their healing process. Because we use the word healer wrong anyway, but that's a whole nother conversation. The healer is actually in the quote unquote client. And what what we call the healer now is their role is actually to provide them with guidance, understanding, insight, things they can do to further that healing journey. But the healer sits inside the client, honestly. All you're doing is breaking that out, putting it into action. Okay. So, but empath is great for healers because somebody comes to you and oh, I got this back problem and nobody can do anything about it, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, well, what's going on in your life? And they tell you a story, but at the same time, you can feel what's going on in the back. And you can feel that there are some emotions and anxieties going on. And so if you get somebody who's not tuned into their emotions, they'll say, well, there isn't anything wrong. I mean, I've got the house and the wife and the kids and, you know, this big deal going on at the office or in my business or whatever it is. But yeah, what I'm feeling in your chest is some anxiety. There's something in this process that's unsettling for you. Well, you know, I've gotten some weird things with my business partner. I'm kind of concerned about whether they're on the level. Oh, okay, now we're getting someplace. Okay. And so being an empath and being able to tune into that in somebody else who can't tune into their emotions is hugely helpful because you can lead them down a path. And I see this a lot with men. It's not as common with women, but it happens with women too, where it's like, well, I don't know what I'm feeling, but I'm just keyed up, you know? And that's because they don't have that emotional vocabulary and they don't understand emotional nuances the way an empath does, who can totally tell the difference between fear and anxiety and excitement. Okay, those read very similar to somebody who doesn't have a broad emotional vocabulary, who's been trained to just ignore that shit and press on regardless.
That's so interesting. So I would guess from based on what you're saying that so many intuitives then would be empaths.
A great many intuitives are empaths. Not all of them. Again, it's one of these things that, you know, there are subsections, there are nuances, okay, and there are other ways to receive your information. If you look at the five clairs that they talk about, empathy is not one of them, okay? It's sight, it's hearing, it's smell, it's taste, it's touch, okay? And touch is as close as you get to empath, okay? Because it's like, okay, I'm sensing vibration, I'm sensing, you know, whatever the information is that's coming through the touch. There are a lot of things you can get as a clairsentient. So a lot of empaths will identify closely with that clairsentient aspect of spiritual giftedness, but they may also, in addition, have a certain amount of clairseeing or clairhearing or clairknowing. That's another tricky one, the clairknowing. And that's one that I have because you have to kind of learn to discern what is your brain just prattling on and doing its thing and be able to tell the difference between that and this divinely arriving information.
And how do you get there? Like, are there some practices that you can do that help clarify?
There are a whole shit ton of practices
Oh,
you can do. And
good.
the simplest thing you can do is start keeping track. Okay. So get a journal, get an app on your phone, something that's always kind of with you. Okay. And start keeping track of things. It's like, okay, I was driving down the road and I got this feeling I'm supposed to turn left. It's not the route I had in mind. Okay, so you have a choice in that moment, right? Do you take the left or do you take the route that you had in mind? Either way, there's information down that road. Okay, one of the most common things I hear in a development circle is this story of, oh, I had this thought at the last minute that I shouldn't sign this contract. It's like, okay, so you didn't. So what happened? No, I did. Okay, what happened? It was a really bad thing. Okay, and they'll go on to tell this horrible story. So there's information either way you go. So that's the first thing. Don't beat yourself up if you ignored the voice, you went your regular route, and you ended up at a car accident or in a car accident or late for your meeting or whatever it was. Okay, and speaking of car accidents, taking the left might actually lead you to a car accident. I discovered this when I started following my voice because I'm a healer. Healers have these huge auras around them, and they are sent places sometimes just to calm the energy, to make things better for the people there, to provide support. It's your presence that does it. You don't always have to do anything. And when I
Right.
started listening to my intuition about take that left, it's like, why do I keep going past these car wrecks and people pulled over on the side of the road? And why? Well, I didn't ask what's the quickest route to get me there. I asked what's the optimal route. And optimal takes into mind the good of everyone involved. And so, yeah, I might arrive a little slower to the grocery store, but my presence at the site of that accident does something to support the people who are involved in that.
Yeah, I had a
And
similar ex
if you want to do something active, you can leave angels and stuff with them to help for a higher outcome. Go ahead.
I had a similar experience years ago. Before the Oklahoma City bombing, I was scheduled to go to Dallas for a work thing. So I get to Dallas and it was in northern Texas, and the work thing was canceled. And I'm just sitting there,
Like,
that which
why
isn't
am I here?
why am I here? What is the reason for me being here? And then the bombing took place. I now know that it was me to be there to help, balance the
To
energy and
support that
the support.
energy, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, paying attention, keeping a journal, writing down.
Keeping track of what happens when you take that left and being curious about why that was a good choice. Okay, because we have in our heads what we think are the good things,
Yep.
right? The good thing is that I arrived to my destination on time. The good thing is that, I get more money. The good thing is, whatever that good thing is for you, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's those things, but more often it's about the well-being of the world of someone else, or what I want to say, taking your journey where it's supposed to go as opposed to where you think it's supposed to go, which is oftentimes not the same thing. A lot of times, we in the West, we're raised with this, set a goal, you're at A, you're going to take these 16 steps, you're going to get to B, it's going to be amazing. You'll be happy when you get there. Okay, now there's a bunch of lies in that, but that's what we're raised.
Right.
Raised on. And so we think this spiritual journey is going to be straight. And I was talking to somebody the other day who had a what I call a sudden left moment, a brick wall moment. She had this inspiration as she was waking up that she should get this degree because she's in another country. There's this whole industry around something that the government does in this country. And she's like, I'm going to get this degree. I'm going to go get this good paying job. And, life's going to be amazing. And I'm going to follow my spiritual journey. She got the degree. And the day that she got the degree, the government discontinued the program.
Oh, fascinating.
So all of those high paying jobs went away. And she sat with it and went, well, now what do I do? And then the next thing that came to her was she was to write a book. And in the process of writing the book, she had an incredible spiritual insight. Okay, now if she hadn't gone down that road, she wouldn't have taken that sharp left into the book writing that led her to the spiritual insight. Okay, but the carrot that was needed to take her down that road was that high-paying government-related job.
Yep.
And then your soul goes, nope, that wasn't the reason we came here. Look left.
It's so cool as we get older and we can look back. We have the gift of time then.
Yes, when you look back, the context, it becomes clear that this is why I was directed there. But in the moment, the important thing to remember when something gets yanked out of your grasp like that is to have your fit, right? We're human. You're going to have your, God damn it, where'd my cheese go, right?
Yeah.
Okay, have your fit, but then release that and start to get curious about, okay, why was I brought here? If it wasn't for that hunk of cheese or that carrot, why was I brought here? And you will be amazed at what comes out of these moments of quote unquote disappointment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting, because I think this is what you're talking about is one of the ways that I suggest too is learning how to follow your intuition. And I'd never thought of being an empath, like gives you so much more, so many more signals, so much more information. And
Exactly. Exactly. Now, the other thing you want to learn as you're going along this empath journey is to discern what is yours and what is not yours. Okay?
Yeah.
Because there's a difference between the two. And if you're having trouble discerning it at the beginning, that's not unusual, but there are tools you can use to help you. Okay. One of them is muscle testing. I don't know if you've ever done any of that. And traditionally, it's taught as a two-person operation. Okay.
Yep.
But you can muscle test on yourself. And here's how you do it. There are a few options, but this is the simplest one. The first thing is you get into a state of curiosity about the answer to the question you're about to ask.
Okay.
Okay. The other thing you want to keep in mind is you can ask as many questions as you want, so keep them very simple and clear cut. Okay. An example of a good question would be, is my name Robin? Okay. And my name is not Robin. Okay, so I would muscle test weak for that. Okay, is my name Zofia? I would muscle test strong for that because that's the truth. Okay, but if I say something like, will the house sell within 30 days? Okay, just out of the clear blue sky, like that, no context. You're going to get a mushy answer on that because maybe you're not supposed to sell the house. Maybe the reason that you think you're going to sell the house isn't going to actually come to fruition. Okay? Right? We've put a lot of assumptions into this. And
Yeah.
maybe the house will sell in 31 days. Okay? You know? So you want to kind of build up the larger context and go down to the very specific. So generally how I approach a muscle testing session is I test for things that I know categorically to be true and categorically to be false. So 2 + 2 = 4. That is immutable. That's always a truth. Okay, 2 + 2 = 5 is always a falsehood. Okay, there's no, well, you know, I never liked my birth name involved in that. Okay. I go with something really clear cut, like the math problem, to test if I'm, what I want to say, if I'm in polarity is what they call it, okay? Because you can get turned around if you're sick or in distress, that kind of thing, you can test backwards. So the first thing I establish is if I'm testing accurately. So 2 + 2 = 4, 2 + 2 = 5. And then I think about the question that I want to ask. So if we go back to the house question, okay, will the house sell in 30 days? The reason I would ask that question is because, let's say I'm considering a job in Ohio and it's too long to commute to Ohio. And if the interview was good, they're saying they're putting together an offer for me, okay? And so being human, I'm like going, okay, so what happens? What happens? I want to know what happens, right? So the bigger question is it optimal for me to take that job in Ohio?
Yeah.
Because maybe it's not optimal for me to do that for some reason that's not apparent to me yet. Maybe it would move me away from my aging parents who in 2 weeks are going to fall down and break a hip or some other elderly tragedy that's going to require me to be back here. Okay?
Yeah.
Don't know any of that yet. So ask about the bigger picture and work your way into the smaller picture. Okay. In this case, with an empath, what I would advise after you've made sure you're testing correctly would to be to bring to mind what it is you want to ask about. Let's say you've got like this hovering anxiety that's been with you and you just can't ditch it. Is this hovering anxiety mine? If you test strong, it's yours. If you test weak, it's somebody else's. Okay, so now you can kind of look at what are the characteristics of that hovering anxiety? When did it start? Who was I with? What was going on when it showed up? Because empaths tend to attract people who will dump their stuff on you. Okay, people figure that out subconsciously. It's like, if I go hang with her, I'm going to feel better afterwards, but they won't know why. Because they don't even have to discuss whatever it was. Just being in your aura helps them and they move on. So, knowing whether it's your anxiety or their anxiety is helpful. Because if it's your anxiety, okay, now you can look at what's going on in my life that I have this hovering anxiety. Is there something going on at work, in my relationship? Am I concerned about my finances? What the thing is? Is there some program in my subconscious that says I should be waiting for the other shoe to drop, right? Some of us are not comfortable with life is good because of our childhoods. And that's okay. We all have these psychological things that we schlep around with us, but it's good to understand if it's your psychological thing and then you can work with that, or if it's somebody else's random anxiety, in which case it's like, okay, depending on how you want to work. Some people like to work with spiritual teams. Some people would rather just work with their higher self. You can say, higher self, okay, this anxiety is not mine. Please remove it. Easy peasy, light and breezy, gone. Whoop.
Just like
Okay.
that. Okay.
Right, because you knew it wasn't yours. Okay. If you say to higher self, just remove this lingering anxiety, I don't know who it belongs to, if it's mine or somebody else. It's not going to go anywhere. Because you haven't learned what you need to know from that hovering anxiety.
Yeah, good point. Now, I've heard different people test, some people will hold their arms out and
Yes. Oh, I didn't talk about the physical means of making that happen. Yes. You do not need a second person to do this. The simplest thing to do is to make a ring with your index finger and your thumb, and then make one with your other one that goes through the ring. Okay. So they're
okay.
interlocked. Okay. And if you want to hold it firmly enough that you can't yank them apart. Okay. So now you want to do your testing. 2 + 2 = 4. And can you pull them apart? 2 + 2 = 4. It's firm. Okay. All right. 2 + 2 = 5. Okay. So that's the basis of it. So now we go hovering anxiety. Is it mine? No. Bye bye, hovering anxiety.
So I would assume after you've done this multiple times that you start start
You
to get
start
it.
to see the patterns, right? You start to recognize the characteristics of emotions that aren't yours. And so you get to the point where you don't really need the muscle testing anymore. If you've spent some time examining when it showed up, how it appeared for you, as opposed to something that is yours. And so when you're observing, when you're making notes on it, you begin to see the patterns, and it helps you in understanding and learning that discernment. There are also exercises that you can do, and there's a whole book full of them. There's a book by Rose Rosetree called The Empowered Empath. And so book one is like a workshop. It's got 30 days of exercises. Just try this one. Now, you're not going to need all the tools in there, but some of them will work better for you than others. And I don't know which ones are going to work better for you, which is why you go through the 30 days and you go, okay, I like this one. I like this one. I like this one. One of my favorite ones that worked the best for me, your mileage may differ, is like a volume button. And how you want to practice this and learn with this is you want to start in a situation where there's like one other person that you're neutral to. This is, don't try it with your spouse and your kids to start out. You're not neutral to them. Okay. So, like, you're in the library, for example, and there's some random stranger sitting at the next table. Okay. And there's like almost nobody else in the building. What you want to do is you want to kind of focus in, tune into their energy, who they are, and then turn the dial down on that energy. And I do it as a visualization. You can do it as a physical thing, like turning your hand, okay, and turn it down, and turn it down, and turn it down until you get it to zero. Okay. Initially, it'll dip a little bit and maybe it won't go as far as you want it to, but with practice, it starts to drop farther and farther. And so turn them down, turn them down, turn them down till you get them to zero and then turn them up, 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 up. It's like, oh, okay. And so you start to do that with one person and then you can up the difficulty. Okay. I used to do this when I was at the gym because I would go at weird times of the day. Grocery stores are great, like at the wee hours in the morning. There aren't a whole lot of people in there. There are plenty of places where you can go find people you're neutral to in small quantities. And then you up the difficulty with like two people. You turn this one down, turn that one down, turn them both down, turn this one up, down, and just practice tuning in and tuning out from other people's energy. And once you start to learn to do that, eventually you can learn to just turn all of it down. So you can be like Renee Spears. And when you hang up the phone, that's it. Until you don't want to be, until you want to know what's going on with a client, in which case you can turn them up and go, "Oh my heavens. What's going on with your left knee?"
Now, one of the things that I have heard from other empaths is this idea of putting like a protective bubble around you.
Yes.
Can you
And
talk a little bit about
shielding,
that?
shielding is a beautiful and amazing thing, and it can be used in a variety of ways. And it has strengths, it has limitations. I use shielding. I don't use it to control my empathness because I want to be able to turn that on and off. Shielding kind of hangs out there. Okay. And the most common thing that you see in New Age circles is, I have this bubble of golden light. Now, I'm not going to diss the bubble of golden light. It's fabulous. It feels good. It does a number of basic things. So if your bubble of golden light is working for you, keep on doing that. Okay. But you can do more advanced things. Okay. Because sometimes you will find yourself under quote unquote psychic attack. Okay, it's like it feels like the world is just coming for me. There's a reason it feels that way. Somebody's got it in for you. Okay, so this is a really good space to use things like shielding. Okay, because the people we're turning up and down, they're neutral to us. They're not concerned with us. They don't wish us any good or ill will. It's neutral, easy to turn them up and down. Somebody who has it in for you. You're not going to be able to turn them down enough. Okay. And that's where the shielding comes in. And I could do days and days and days on shielding. The thing to keep in mind when you're designing shielding is you want to make sure you don't harm anybody else in the process. If you go into like some of the Wiccan and witchcraft kind of shields that are out there, a lot of them are like turn it back on the sender, you know, three times, that kind of thing. I don't play that. I mean, you can, but there's karma attached to that, and I kind of want to be done with a lot of my karma. There are shields that you can envision that are kind of like, I want to call them space shuttle shields, okay, where that. They're there to protect you, but they destruct over time. And so you can put it up and it'll take the incoming, whatever it is, and it gradually goes to pieces. And then you put up another one. But it doesn't cause backlash onto people who were unintended targets. It doesn't harm the person who is sending it, this kind of thing. But it does protect you from that intensity coming in.
Yeah, and I would assume in the day of social media now, if you're not an empath, often when people are have nasty comments or something on social media, you can kind of just brush it off, like, oh well. But I
Yeah,
have
exactly.
it. But if you're an
It's,
empath,
oh, you feel all the intention behind that comment. Oh,
oh,
absolutely. Sweet Jesus.
which I would assume the majority of the time really has nothing to do with you
It
either.
has a lot more to do with them, absolutely. And that's one thing that I remind my mind of when I read something like that is this has to do with them. Okay, the fact that they see ill intention in whatever I've done, this kind of thing. That's their shit that's happening there. It's not my shit. Okay, this is another level of discernment, right?
Yes.
People see in others the things they hate about themselves. So doesn't mean the other person has it, but there you are.
I like the muscle testing for that one. Is this their shit or is this my shit? You know?
Exactly, because it takes a while to kind of build your sea legs, because we're taught to kind of accept that everything's ours.
So I know that often people look at being an empath for themselves as like a bad thing. Like they came into this lifetime with a, you know, a, I don't know.
It feels like a cross.
A cross,
It really
okay.
does. It feels like a cross, especially when you don't know what to do with it. Okay. And so what I would invite you to explore, if you're in this stage where it feels like it's a cross, you've learned to have all kinds of codependent behaviors because of it. Okay. If you're in that space, get Rose Rosetree's book. Spend the 30 days going through it, practicing the tools, start to get some separation for yourself, as well as get some empowerment around it. Okay, because once you learn that you can turn that person up and down, and that there are things you can do about it that don't include people pleasing and sacrificing your life to make everybody around you happy, which is an impossible task. You start to feel more powerful. You don't feel like the victim anymore. And that will help you in your growth process. That will help you really begin to distinguish yourself as an individual who's worthy of love, who's worthy of attention, who's worthy of time for herself, who's worthy of creating her own happiness inside herself, of not being the sacrificial victim. All these things start to spill out of that.
Wow, this is so fascinating. I appreciate everything that you shared. Because I'm not an empath, can you think of anything else that is important that people should know that would help them?
What you need to know, okay, and you may know it intellectually, okay, because when you're in this world, you get a lot of, all is one, one is all, blah, 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 and that's part of the empath experience. What you need is the reverse of that. You need a little bit of, I am an individual, okay. Because we can end up too far on either end of these extremes. You need to know how to claim your individuality sometimes, and you need to know how to be part of oneness sometimes, but not the victim of oneness.
Yes, good point. And I would have to say, as not an empath, I don't know what the unempath word is, but sometimes it's hard for us to get the idea and connect to the that we are all in this together, that we are all one.
Yes.
So having the ability to do that more easily, I think of that as a huge gift.
Absolutely. Well, and I would suggest that turning up and turning down exercise is useful for people who are not empaths, in that you have everybody shut down on zero. So you can practice that exercise in reverse. I'm going to sit with this one person and I'm going to turn them up and see what I can perceive from them. It might, and be curious. Don't assume that it's going to be feelings or physicalness in your body. Just be curious. Turn it up and see what you get.
That's what I do that before readings in a different way. I'd never thought of it as a volume button, but clearly
Yeah.
before I do readings, I'm, you know, opening it up to, okay, let the stuff
Yeah.
in now.
Let the stuff in. Show me, show me, show me.
Show me.
And you can do that in a very general way, but this is a very specific tuning into that person's energy, as opposed to I'm opening the space to all the information as well.
Now, on a different level, I feel like we're having, since COVID and being in this time now where we're having an awakening that,
Yes.
you know, on our planet, the spiritual awakening
Well, and we
happening.
asked for it. I know this is
We
not a
did.
popular viewpoint, but we asked for COVID. There were many people out there praying, okay, and the answer to your prayers frequently wears extremely ugly looking clothes. But there were a lot of people out there saying, I'm really unhappy with what I'm doing in my life. Okay. I need time. I don't have any time to think about it or make changes. Okay. And there was a lot of that in the culture, if you remember back.
Yep.
People were fretting, but they couldn't make a change because they're trapped in this job, and, you know, because they have family shackle and debt and all of this kind of stuff. Well, here's your time. Here's your space. Here's your opportunity to reevaluate and make another choice free of that job.
Yep.
There you go.
So do you think, have you noticed that during this time, then we're having more souls come in that are empaths? Are you seeing more empaths with children?
Empaths can frequently have families and children and this kind of thing. They tend to be a little, it tends to be a little prickly for them. Okay. But it doesn't, being an empath doesn't stop you from being in relationship with someone else. And oftentimes we end up in relationship with like the worst freaking possible people. There's a reason that the narcissist and the empath is kind of a cliche. But you can start to release yourself from those patterns as you learn to turn people up and turn people down and recognize the manipulations that are happening. Narcissists are really fond of empaths because we don't want to say no. We're willing to buy into all their gaslighting stories and all of that stuff. And we can also, here's a bonus of empath. We see the potential in everybody. I know that in there is a spark of the divine. I know deep in their core that they're a good person. Okay, that's true. Everyone on the earth has that little tiny core. Some of us hide it much more deeply than others. Okay, but part of your job as an empath is to learn discernment about who is on the path of expressing that potential and who is hiding from it as hard as they can. Okay. And I've got a rule in my life, okay? Because you can set boundaries. This is another thing that empaths need to learn to do more effectively because it's hard for us. It's really hard. So don't kick yourself because you don't have good boundaries. It's not surprising. It's a hard, hard thing to do as a normal person, super hard as an empath. Okay, so give yourself kudos. But set a boundary. And my boundary is, I work with people who are working to express their potential. I do not work with people who are not. If you can have all the potential in the world, if you're not showing signs of expressing it, I'm walking on down the road. I'm not going to waste my time and my headache trying to play that game with you.
Yeah. Words of wisdom right there. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Well, and some people will look at that and go, oh my God, that's harsh. You know, they're suffering. They're whatever. It's like they chose the path they're on. They're making a choice every day whether to act on that or not act on that. And until they make the choice to act on that, they're not my people.
Yep.
And they're having the experience that they want to have, need to have exactly in that moment. It's not my job to mess with that.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom around this. It's been invaluable for me to learn all this.
I'm glad.
Now you can listen to Zofia every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific time on
it's
your
every Monday.
Oh, I'm sorry, Monday. Thank you.
Mondays at 4
Thank
p.m.
You. 4 p.m. And I will put a link in the show notes to where you can find that. Yes. And you also have a superpower quiz. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I do. Before I do that, I will tell you, you can go to sovereignself.live.
Okay.
If it's not Monday at 4 p.m., the archive will be there and available. You can go back and listen to 3 years of Sovereign Self if you want to. In fact, I'd love it if you did. Because it's part of what keeps the show alive, right?
Exactly.
So superpowerquiz.us is where my quiz resides. And I put this together to help people understand where their giftedness lies. Okay, this is not, I'm not going to tell you if you're an empath, I'm not going to tell you if you're clairvoyant. This is about the package of your spiritual gifts, right? Some of us are packaged as, for example, an athlete. Okay. Some of us are packaged as like academics. Some of us are packaged as outdoors people. Okay, this is kind of the equivalent of that. This is what your function is, the combination of your spiritual gifts. And so this is where your area of expertise is.
And so superpowerquiz.us.
That is correct. And so you will find out if you are a reader, you will find out if you are a space holder, you will find out if you are a, the word just went away from me, but there are five different things that you can be. Are you a connector? Okay. It talks about where your package of gifts has its personal focal point.
Yeah, I will put a link to that also in the show notes and where to find more info on you. Thank you again for being here. I just cannot tell you how much I've learned. Thank you.
Good. I'm so excited that I could be here and be of help. I know there are so many people who just feel like, I'm just so sensitive, I can't deal with the world. There is hope for you.
There is hope for you. Yes.
There is hope for you. It can be so much better than it is right now, and it's not as hard as you think it's going to be.
I love it. Well, thank you everybody for listening, and we will talk to you again next time.
All right. Bye-bye.